Pow!
So, it does appear that that time has rolled around again, that everyone has got together, that issue 6 is a dim and distant, painless memory, and issue 7 has come upon us, which is awesome. Which is awesome, and we're doing a different thing this week. We've got the general sort of Skype hell to come, I'm sure. But we're all recording our audio individually, and I've got the enviable task of syncing that all back up together and giving it to you and as something we can use. But issue seven, many people thought it would not come after issue 6, but it has. and we've got my Google time. I know. But we've got, as you can hear, we've got the dulcet tones of Kelly Gamont again, over from the States. Hello, Kelly.
Hey, I'm really glad we were able to coordinate again.
Yes, it's good. I think we're settling on Monday as the best date for everyone, and even I've managed to turn up on time, so I'm proud face, as they say. Hopping over the pond, it's Paul Kirkle again. Hello, Mr.
Hello.
Paul.
Good evening. How are we all doing?
Yes. I think we're all wilting, aren't we? Both Brits and Yanks.
It's a global heatwave.
It's toasty.
In Denver there, Mr. Jeff. What are the kids saying? Yeah. Oh, it's nice to be down with the home. I'm home with the Downies, I think is the phrase, isn't it?
It might have been what you have heard. But...
I have heard that. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I'm our host, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm so middle-aged, it's a crisis all by itself. I know, I have been. You might not have noticed that. I mean, I have been ridiculously self-centred and arrogant this week, and I've been shovelling my own artwork up on the show in a futile attempt to convince the world that I am an artist. So that's been fun. My current project is to become 50% Dr. Happy Mac and 50% Mr. Drawry Man. So, yes, but less painful in the execution, I think. So, yeah, sorry about that. I just kind of had some stuff, and I've got myself a new agent, my old agent back, and I thought, you know, I'm going to try and pretend that I'm a real artist. So that's what I've been doing. So I have inflicted that on everyone in the community. Sorry about that. I've stopped now. And
well, don't be. If people aren't complaining, then by all means, I like looking at it. I'll tell you now.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
I got to figure out what kind of story that I want to write so that I can convince you to team up with me and we can make something happen.
Ah, I have a few ideas there. But writing, not my strong point, apart from the one idea I've had about a zombie that lives next door to people. But another show. We'll kick off with, we've had, bizarrely, some feedback on iTunes. At least 2 people have downloaded the podcast in the last 7 episodes, so...
We love you! We have 2 fans to rub together! Wait.
Yes. Apparently, if you rub your fans together fast enough... Yeah, is that like crossing the streams?
Static, and you can stick them to the ceiling, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't going to go there. No. That's what else did. Okay.
Yeah, so we got basically...
Yay!
So, Anders...
Let's have reviews!
Reviews! Anders, UK, he seems to have actually started writing a lot. He tells us that we're a fabulous podcast. And the panel is evenly split between the UK and the US, which really leads to interesting discussions. Both camps have a strong lifetime love of comics, and it's very enjoyable to hear them discuss personal highlights in their comic reading past. It's as if they've known each other for years, and you get the strong impression they could literally sit there for hours chatting about the topic at hand. I wonder where that impression came from. And there's a bit about me at the end being much better at this than...
I'll read it. Final point. Dr. Happy Mac really does a very good job of hosting. Well done, that man. And you and beware.
La, 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 la. Fingers in headphones. Yeah, Kelly, do the other review.
Okay. This is from Strider Paul, who says, if you love comics, you will love this. Recommendations of comics to read, as well as lots of comic chat and reviews.
Yeah, push the boat out, Paul.
Yay.
You could have done. I've said more words there, I would have thought. That's a, not to denigrate our lovely reviewers, but, you know.
No, thank you, reviewers. That, I'm pleased to bits that both of you are hopefully at some point listening to this and hearing that, that we've talked about you and how excited we are that you're here.
Yes, thank you. And everyone else. Next week, Paul, if we get any more reviews, you're reading them, okay?
Oh, no, Kelly did it so well. Now he's set me up for a fall.
Yep. So,
I'm excited about our regular segment this week, and I'm also excited about our debut of a new segment this week. I'm going to tease the rest of the show so people will listen. Yeah. We do.
We do.
Better than you know who.
The segment segment that Ewan wishes we'd stop doing.
No, he loves it.
Well, he wished us to stop naming names, and we've stopped naming names.
We have, yes, we have. We are good people. So, yes, we've obviously Carl Madden, who looks after all of the British tech Google communities, had set us up a comic community. And we have harvested some comments and some feedback from last week from that. I've put them in order in the show notes, but I'm going to skip about the order because we'll do some feedback first. And obviously last week we did the, girlies in comics, and Kelly posted in a link there.
Yes.
Artists who know how to draw comic book girls. Well done. So, I mean, was that... I looked at that and I thought, yeah, there's a couple in there, particularly, you know, more realistic, but a bit cheesecakey, but certainly far less than
a bit. Yes.
Well, can I ask a question?
And that was really.
Yeah.
Please do.
Is that a joke? I mean, not is it a joke, but this is five artists who know how to draw comic book girls, written by a guy. And of, I don't know, four of the artists, possibly five, they really know how to draw strippers. But
yes.
I don't know that they know. I mean, I've been known to bump into girls in the street. No, let's put it to it. I have been known to notice people of either... Yeah, no, I know they are. It's just in comics, strippers are all the girls, bar a couple who aren't. But it's good artwork. But they're not realistic. I mean, last week we were talking about the fact that it is... I got really bad echo, so it's really disconcerting when I'm listening to myself. But... we were talking last week about the fact that people are drawing girls in this really negative comic book stereotype way, and is that the thing that's sort of like putting off female readers because it is such a, you know, not a high benchmark, that's the wrong way of putting it, but it's such an unrealistic expectation to look like this. And as soon as I saw this, you know, list of five people who can draw women, I just thought, we have really not got far off, have we? And Bruce Timm is a hell of an artist, but I don't know anyone that looks like a Bruce Timm girl.
No.
Well, not without surgery, lot of surgery, and then a corset.
Yeah, but I think the Amanda Connor one, I mean, is there a get out if you are a girl comic artist and you choose to draw, I mean, her Silk Spectre drawing, I mean, obviously you can see that it is considerably toned down. I mean, it's still unrealistic and comic booky, but, you know, it's a league back from that. Kelly, do you think being a woman gives you a get out on that?
I don't think it gives you a pass so much as, like, my hang up tends to be, for me, when I look at some of these, what I look at is... is it ever possible that this is a real person or is this Barbie? And it tends to be Barbie, as in no waist and a whole lot of everything else. Huh. And one thing that I noticed about... And then the other thing is that in certain instances, the person who's doing the drawing is striving for a general look that is very... That is aiming to be a sort of realistic portrayal. Like, you know, there's some... Like, if it's a dark alley, like, it's all gritty and dark and things like that. Like, they're trying to set this environment up like it's a real place. And the thing that strikes me about looking at Amanda Connor's stuff is that... and I don't want this to sound like it's a bad thing, and I'm not trying to dismiss it, but it looks like a cartoon. And so I'm willing to go with the world that's being depicted there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Silk Spectre picture that they put at the top of her example, I think is fine. Mm. She's wearing a lot of clothes for a comic book girl. It's, you know, the bar, again,
maybe it's chilly where she is.
Very high, or, you know, I guess a pole that isn't very high. I liked that she's standing like a person might actually stand.
And she's not unrealistically top heavy.
Right.
Which is, you know.
Like, it's possible that somebody could look like that. She's got nice arms. It looks mm-hmm. like I can see a couple of abs in that out peeking out from under that outfit. So, yeah. Like, I really liked the picture that they took, that they used as the example. And I flipped through a couple of other things after I saw her and went, oh, that's kind of interesting. Mm. And I liked it a lot. I was glad to see
so I think
her on that list.
The general consensus of that is that, you know, more work is needed here by comics in general.
Absolutely, because most of them are still not, like, knowing how to draw comic book women is different than knowing how to draw women in comic books.
Yes.
That's a very important distinction.
And I think that's why, that's, just to trot out again the patron saint of the comic show. That's the thing about Stumptown that makes me happy, is that it's a woman in a comic book. It's not a comic book woman.
Yeah. Absolutely. For other comments there, we've got Dominic O'Rourke from the show. I mean, not much to discuss, but he's basically saying he wants us to have a chat about a completely different sort of comic, which is the children's comics, which over here in the UK is, you know, Topper, Beezer, Whizzer and Chips. Obviously, the Beano and the Dandy, which the American market has probably heard of pretty convincingly. So that's something I think we should look at, you know, as well, because obviously there's more to comics than just, you know, there. And so, yes, Dominic, we will get round to that. I think probably the list of things we could do expands at more than one thing per week, so we're not going to catch up on ourselves. But
But I like the idea, particularly because of most of what we've been talking about. A lot of people dismiss comic books as being for kids, and so far I don't think we've discussed anything that I would want my junior high nephew to be reading. I'm sure he's reading anyway, but it's not something I would hand to him and go, you should totally read Watchmen.
Yeah.
Just, you know, at 12, I'm not going to do that.
No.
Yeah, he needs to be way more disaffected first, and then I'll spring it on him. But, you know, in the meantime, I really like the idea of talking about kids' comics, because it's something that you hear a lot about, even though there, I don't know how many there actually are that I would send kids to go and read.
Mm. Actually, can I say, my pick next week, it wasn't because I've... was umming and ahhing between two graphic novels this week. The pick next week will be one of the most perfect comics for kids, which is David Peterson's Mouse Guard.
Now you've given everyone a spoiler.
Yeah, massive spoiler.
For next week. It depends on whether I remember or not.
La, la, la.
But I tell you what, for kids, Mouse Guard is just perfect. It is sublimely beautiful.
Well, you could just change your picks around then.
Yeah, I might do it for this week, actually. And I'll go into the reasons why then.
And I will throw out there, go find Boom Studios.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Because Pink Puffy Heart, everything I've ever read of theirs, they did a Muppet Show comic book.
Yes, yep. And David Peterson did the covers for that a number of times.
I love them so, and I went and bought every one of them. And they're super great. They've done some other Disney stuff. Like, I think they did a Toy Story comic book and some other things. So if you want to get kids into it, that's a good way to do it. And they're pretty good about having collections, too.
Mm.
Like, here's, you know, 5 or 6 issues at a whack or 10 issues at a whack. And you can get a trade instead of having to, you know, buy every issue individually or whatever. So particularly for ones that are set, you can buy, like, a bundle of them at once. So
that kind of sinks into a quick one, which is just a yes or no. And we'll do yes or no's all round. It's like it's popped out of the British Tech Bash last week. Columbo as a comic strip. Good idea or awesome idea? Oh, Kelly.
Wow.
Awesome.
Wow.
I can't believe it's not been done. I cannot believe it.
How have we not had a Columbo comic yet?
Oh, how does that not... Oh, that would be like... I mean, does it not? Would not the Stumptown people be all over that for style of art?
Oh my god!
Oh, that would be brilliant.
That would be so fun.
Yeah, and it's all written.
See, this just makes this just makes me think like all I do is, and I know, but this makes me think of like all the other TV shows I used to watch with my dad. So I'm like, I really need in my life a Rockford Files comic book.
Oh my god, that would be brilliantly awesome.
See?
Oh. Would it not be just, why don't we just form a little imprint and then go and knock on the doors of Columbia and all these people and say, hi, have you got some content that we could comicize? And that would be, the Rockford Files.
That would be awesome. We can skip Mrs. Columbo.
Yep.
But Columbo and the Rockford Files, that would be awesome.
Oh, would that not be? Yes. Sorry, I'm away now.
You know, actually, Starsky and Hutch would make for a good comic also.
I was going to say that because you said Huggy Bear at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Magnum P.I., the comic book. You'd have to get a special person just for all the mustaches.
Yeah. The first issue could come with a free mustache. That you could just
a mustache wrangler.
Yeah, I think, yes. I mean, I think Starsky and Hutch.
Mustache colorist.
Is Starsky and Hutch is good. You know, Rockford Files is awesome and things. But for some bizarre reason, there's some little thing. I don't know what it is. Something about Columbo that just seems extra, extra right.
Oh, yeah. Barney Miller, the comic book.
Oh.
Oh, God. Why has this not happened? Why has this not happened? Right. Okay, we're on that then. And just to follow up on the last bit of feedback and stuff from the thing is, I don't know whether your old video's frozen, Kelly, or you're just still excited.
No, I'm like, no, I'm going to spend the whole rest of the show turning over good names for that comic imprint in my mind now.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Like, I'll just drive down to Dark Horse this afternoon and be like, oh, my God, you guys.
Yeah, don't, because we need to...
Yeah, Alien versus Predator, I know, but...
But Columbo.
Columbo.
Columbo versus Batman.
Columbo versus Predator.
It would be a draw.
There's the show title.
Truly, it would be a draw every episode.
God.
Columbo versus Predator, you heard it here first.
Oh, God. Yes, brilliant.
My money's on Columbo winning that fight.
Actually, I'll tell you what, I just want to see the scene where Batman's talking to Columbo. Columbo turns around, Batman disappears, and Columbo just turns around and goes, because I can just see his reaction.
Oh my God, that would be awful.
I did that again, huh?
Yeah.
How does he do that? I'll ask my mum.
So anyway, finally on the thing, on the communities bit was the guy that made a stupid sculpture out of $20,000 worth of comics.
Yes, that's a bit unfortunate, really.
It was, wasn't it?
Although, to be fair, he didn't know. I mean, it's only one of them that was worth that much money, wasn't it? I can't remember. It was like Avengers issue one or something crazy.
Yeah, most of that. Most of that 20 grand was Avengers issue one, but yeah, there was a lot of stuff in there.
But ouch.
And then he's like turned around at the end, when they pointed it out.
What is
kind
wrong
of like,
with people?
Well, he didn't, apparently, ostensibly, he didn't know when he made it that they were worth money. But, you know,
well, also, didn't he find them in a skirt?
All my baseball cards, you know, yeah.
Mm. It's a shame because you're never going to get them back. It's not, you know.
You can't un-paper mache them.
No, what's done is done. So I was a bit shocked when we were preparing to the general feature on who's better than the unnamed artist. I was looking through a list of internet lists.
Gave Dibbons,
yes. Yep. I was looking through a list of artists that might be or might not be better than Gave Dibbons, and I found as top 100 comic strip artists of all time, in at number 79 was this guy called Dave Gibbons.
Hmm.
No, it's not that Dave Gibbons.
No, it didn't look like him.
And I'm going to stick with that story.
Although Brian Bolland was in at number 30, so that saved everyone.
There is some justice in the world.
There is some justice. And I'm going to go last on this. And breathing that, so Kelly, having said that number 30 in the list of best comic book artists of all time, who this week do you think is better than Gave Dibbons?
My pick this week is Brian Bolland.
Is it?
Interestingly enough, it totally is. And I'll tell you why. I've been going back through like some of the stuff that I've really enjoyed reading so that I have more to talk to you guys about because I don't read a whole lot of the current stuff at the moment. So I was looking for like what stuff that I've read and really enjoyed, and one of them was Batman the Killing Joke.
Oh, yes.
Mm. Which is
so
awesome.
I picked it up. It's on. I was reading through it, and I've got this special edition that has an intro in it by Tim Sale. And the thing that made me decide that this was obviously going to be my better than this week is, so for those who don't know, Killing Joke, Batman the Killing Joke, is a story by Alan Moore and art by Brian Bolland. And this comic book and me go back a long way, but I'm just going to point out a bit from the introduction, which says, I am told that the origins of Batman the Killing Joke go back to a, I hope the UK gentlemen are sitting down, Batman Judge Dredd proposal that Moore and Bolland cooked up. When it fell through, Moore asked Bolland what he wanted to do, and Bolland said, the Joker, please. So polite, and thus a classic was born. So what this tells me two things. Number one, awesome. Number two, oh my god, Batman Judge Dredd. Number three, visually, Killing Joke, which is one that has always stood out in my mind, artwork-wise, is what Watchmen could have been. Like, when you look at teaming up Alan Moore with somebody, this is one of the things that you have to consider. And I really enjoy it. So it's another one that, this is another one of those, Kelly reads it twice because I like to look at all the pictures again separately from reading all the stuff that's happening. And it, for those who don't know, it has a nice fast start. There's no warm up.
No, it's a very here. Brutal book, isn't it? It is.
Oh, it absolutely is. So there you go. That's my pick.
Awesome. Yes, I remember reading it, and Bolland's art does somewhat on the static, you know, from time to time, but you know the draftsmanship is what makes his stuff. But there's some shocking images in that one, really shocking.
Oh,
but the good thing about it is they're shocking with consequence, yes. And that's what irritates me about comic books. Occasionally, something will happen, and there is no consequence. It's just a ugly scene for the sake of being more violent than issue 6 or whatever.
Yeah.
What I loved about Killing Joke was the pivotal moment is so beautifully timed and shot and created and drawn and rendered and everything. You know, you see Jim Gordon's face, you see Barbara Gordon's face, you see the Joker. It is a fabulous bit of artwork, but you feel that a really nasty piece of violence has been done. Whereas other times you don't. You'll see the Joker shoot somebody through the face with a comedy gun. And it's done for laughs, and you just think it's. I think we're missing the consequence of the actions of what's happening.
I think it was the writing in of the, because often the Joker's difficult because he is so mad and so manic and things. Yeah. But that instant, you know, there was not just the art and the shock of the, you know, the Barbara Gordon falling over backwards with the blood and things, but the malevolence in the Joker. You know, this is like you suddenly wrote, yeah, you know, this guy's a right bastard through and through.
Total psycho, as he should be. That is the point of him.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was this was actually one of the things that struck me when the Joker was portrayed in the current iteration of Batman movies, was the bit when Alfred says, there are some men who just want to watch the whole world burn.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm like, that is Killing Joke Joker.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
That's exactly who he is. And and I'd never heard it described quite so accurately and succinctly. So I was like,
they totally nailed it.
Yeah.
Yes. And the Joker shouldn't be the silly hoo-hoo character from the 60s Batman.
Yep. Or even the first Batman movie.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, the Joker is seriously screwed in the head.
Yeah.
I mean, like irreparably damaged, and he dances with revel in that insanity.
Yep.
I mean, he celebrates how screwed up he is, and you totally get that in The Killing Joke.
Mm. I think so. I think it's probably the best portrayal of the Joker as a character in comics.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, I liked the recent Joker with the whole Scott Snyder run, when they redid it with the new 52. I liked aspects of it, but this comes back to what we were talking about earlier with comics for kids. Oh my goodness, was it ugly. And it was a really horrible story, and it ended in a really horrible way. And I won't spoil it, because it's a recent Batman event book. Okay. But
well, with Joker, there shouldn't be happy endings. Just because he has a smile doesn't mean happy endings.
Yeah, but it was ugly. I mean, I was explaining to some of the students, if there was a horror film that had these things in, I just listed the things that happen at the end of the end of Death in the Family, if it was filmed and it was photorealistic, it would be the most ugly possible horror film you can imagine. And yes, there was a twist and a reverse, and you know, there always is. But the ugliness of the Joker's actions, I didn't like it. I didn't. There are some comics that I appreciate how cleverly they're done. Generally, Grant Morrison ones, funnily enough. But I don't actually enjoy them. I don't enjoy the tone and the content and whatever. And actually, the Snyder Joker is one of them. I didn't enjoy the finale or the story. But you had to say, tell you what, that was a well-told story. I didn't like the story, but it was a well-told story.
But isn't that just, you know, isn't that just comics? Is that not, you can point to stuff like that and say, this is what comics do that no other medium can get.
Yes. Yep.
So, hooray for comics.
Hooray for us.
You know, it's, yeah, I think it's a perfect example of that. You know, Killing Joke is a perfect example, and the current, you know, Joker run is a perfect example. It's pure writing and literature with accompanying artwork.
Mm-hmm.
But accompanying artwork, Jeff, who've you got? Who do you reckon's better than that older, poor, sadly unappreciated Gave?
All right, so I found an artist that's new to me that I'm really liking, and his name is Nick Dragota, and I found him in a comic that is from Image. It just started in March, and for those of you that are listening 2 years from now, that would be March 2013, and it's called East of West, and he just has this way of creating what looks like traditional, very familiar modern comic art, but there's like a little bit of extra emotion in it. So he really kind of pulls you out of the regular comic page, and then you end up with stuff like this, where you have three children that are so not children. And he just draws you in with the visuals. It's this very fluid, very natural, very compelling style of art. So that would be Nick Dragota.
Yeah, I'm looking at it on the internet now. I've never heard of him before, and definitely lovely, lovely.
Yeah, he's totally really new to me.
The colors, the composition, the characters, everything is screams tradition. And then you look at it and you go, modern. That's very nice. Very nice. And Paul, your turn, matey.
Right, mine is...
You stole my pick. You stole my first pick.
Yeah, but you didn't do this as a pick. It's not my fault.
And I'm reserving the right to cheat. When we get to me in a minute, I'm cheating outrageously. Okay, cool. But anyway.
My pick is... Right, so Dave McKean is my favourite artist on the planet. There is another comic book artist who is equal in many, many ways. I love Dave because he is so able to do a number of things so well. But there's a guy called Bill Sienkiewicz who his artwork is just gorgeous. And I'm looking around for, because I got the comic to show. Ah, here we go. And I was going to say this would be my budget price pick of the week because it used to be really cheap on eBay. He did this, Voodoo Child, which is the illustrated biography of Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, yes, he did.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've seen this.
Gorgeous. Wow. It's painted and beautiful. Now, the one place that Sienkiewicz beats Dave McKean hands down is with text. Sienkiewicz puts text onto a page beautifully, artistically, and the text just flows so gorgeously into the painting. So there's a bit of his painting. It's got a bit of weird photorealism. It's got a bit of... the colours are always perfect. He uses black outlines when black outlines are to be used, but uses every other colour outline, which I appreciate as an artist. I think it's very beautifully done. His artwork is just fabulous. Now, I looked up on eBay, because Voodoo Child, it came out, and it had a CD of unreleased Hendrix music in the back of the hardback book. So the Hendrix fans were buying it for the music, ripping the CD out, and then selling the book on eBay. So you could get it for £3 or £4. So I just went on eBay to have a look, and it's gone up to £75 and $50, and, you know, you can't buy it cheap anymore. So, since it's too expensive, Bill Sienkiewicz, look for his written and drawn work called Stray Toasters. It is absolutely bat poop mental. It is completely off the wall. It is about a toaster who gains sentience and becomes a psycho. And there is a down... I tell you what, he would draw a hell of a Columbo, thinking about it.
Yes.
He's got a downtrodden cop with the drooping moustache and everything, chasing this psycho toaster around who is killing, murdering and mutilating people around New York. It's a bonkers story. And the artwork is beautiful. So...
Do you know who else would draw an absolutely spot-on Columbo?
Don't know.
Dave Gibbons. Dave
do
Gibbons.
You know what? I was actually thinking...
He might do it.
Dave Gibbons,
I mean,
the pauses,
I think it would work.
When you needed Columbo to pause and think and then come back with a one-liner, I can imagine that as a Dave Gibbons nine-panel shot. Exactly the same picture, all nine panels. And then on the ninth panel, you've got the speech bubble. And that's the one place where I can see big old Dave Gibbons doing it spot on.
Da-da-da.
Yes. Oh, we'll have to ask him. So I've, as I teased earlier, I've cheated massively because, as far as I'm concerned, a lot of my pick for this week, its work is very comic strip ish in its treatment of movement and a treatment of sort of transitions across the page. And obviously some of the books that he's done actually do contain elements of the comic strip in a more traditional form. And this is the guy that, I mean, is, I might have to stop and sniffle and things, but basically I'm choosing more famous as a children's book artist is Maurice Sendak.
My love.
Just because of, I mean, obviously if you've seen Maurice Sendak's work and everyone's seen Where the Wild Things Are, you don't have to explain why you think he might be the greatest draftsman that ever lived on the planet. But things like other books that not so many people have known, like In the Night Kitchen, which is very comic strip.
Love it.
Is just brilliant. And, you know, some of the stuff... I love Where the Wild Things Are. I wrote a big chunk of my dissertation on Where the Wild Things Are many years ago. And my workshop thing's full of Maurice Sendak books and things. But there are images that Maurice Sendak draws that actually physically make me cry when I look at them, because his line work is
just beautiful.
Beautiful. I mean, you can say stuff about, oh, he draws, some people draws well, some people have line and feeling and things. And stuff like, it's not the greatest stories, and the animated series is an abomination, and I really wish it didn't exist, the Little Bear stories, but the actual artwork in the Little Bear stories... Tiny little pictures, little faces with one dot for eyes, and you look at where the dot's gone, and you just look at that and you think, I give up, you know, done. I'm done here. And just, you know, two years ago, I think he died, and I really, one of the few times when Steve Jobs died, you know, you had to pause and think, well, I'm really, that's something significant to me. But I think 2 years ago when he died, that was for me one of the, you know, I just had to sit down and it was like, you know, a whole part of my, that's it, he's gone, there'll be no more Maurice Sendak illustrations to be had. So
it just makes what we do have even more special.
Yes, and I've, sorry, it just came to me this week that I hadn't picked him, and for a variety of reasons I've picked him this week, and there we go. So sorry about that, it wasn't a comic strip artist at all, but if anyone on the planet is a god,
well, I don't know. It's not a comic strip, and a comic strip is illustrated narrative, surely. And Sendak, you know, he's totally into that. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's not a comic strip in the Marvel DC sense, but it's a pictorial story. So, you know, it depends on where your definition is.
Would you say, Paul? Would you say he was better than Dave Gibbons?
I would be a liar if I didn't say yes.
Sorry, I said the wrong name.
Just cut this bit. Ask him again.
Sorry,
here we go.
Paul, is he better than Gabe Dibbons?
I would say definitely yes.
Yes.
I hate to say this, is probably very poor taste, but even now, 2 years on, I'd still say he's probably better. Sorry, that's very terrible. Sorry.
Yeah.
So you're saying his current work is still better?
I am not saying anything that will get me more hate mail than the legion of Gabe's fans will get me.
Oh, dear. So we also had and some input from a chap called Alex Fox, who does some podcasting for British Tech Network, mostly on the photo show. And he was very effusive with his comments and his praise for the podcast. So thanks very much, Alex. And I'm sure you'll be listening to this in a few days. One of the world's nicer, you know, true nice people. And he pointed out that he doesn't read comics. He's never read comics. He's not interested in comics. But he loves the content of this show so much that he has decided that he's going to start with comics. But he doesn't have any idea. Basically, he said, I want to go out, I want to buy some comics, I want to read them because I want to get as interested in this stuff as you four obviously are. Which is awesome. Which is what you'd want. Exactly what you'd want. So,
I love it.
Round of applause for Alex.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yes! Well done.
So, you know, no pressure, guys, but this guy needs something to read. So, I think probably if he's on issue 7 by now, he's probably noticed that he should download and read Stumptown. So we'll treat that one as a given. But I mean,
and it's 2 volumes. Keep in mind.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I mean, yeah,
this isn't a single issue comic. Like when we're talking about this one, it's a collection. I just want to make sure we're managing expectations. Mm. Like we're not recommending 24 pages of comic. We're recommending a book.
Mm. Yeah.
The collected graphic novel in 2 volumes. Yeah. So.
I mean, where do you think? I mean, if you were starting, if you'd not really had a history of comics and things, is there a gateway? Is it really, you know, the big names in comics, is that where you should go? Or is there something sort of more enticing to bring you in? Obviously, Alex is a, you know, fully grown, matured adult, but he doesn't have a lot of the cultural understanding of comics that some, you know, you might necessarily want to get from. So, you know, Watchmen perhaps isn't the first comic book you should ever read in your life because a lot of the tropes and things in there require you to know comics. So, Kelly, anything? What do you think? Is there an intro gateway?
Well, of course, I would say Stumptown. I think the rest would sort of depend on what sort of non-comic books he enjoys. Like, if it's like my dad reads. Civil War stuff and Cold War spy stuff. Mm-hmm. So, like, if there's a Tom Clancy comic book, that's what I'm going to tell my dad to read. Because he's going to already be sort of predisposed to enjoy it anyway. So, something like that. I would say, for general, all-around sort of comicness... I think everybody should read Stumptown... And then I would probably pick a Frank Miller Batman title.
It's like you read my mind.
I think I would probably have gone with a Frank Miller Batman as well as a good thing.
Well, starting off with a Frank Miller Batman makes sense on a couple levels. First, they're all good. Second, even if you're not into comics, you're already familiar with Batman in one form or another. So you're not going into it cold. So, yeah, definitely a Frank Miller Batman.
What?
Yes. Sorry, but you completely cut out there, Jeff. Good job we've got some backup audio on that one.
Yes.
Okay, so short version. Frank Miller Batman. Yes. I cut out again, didn't I?
I would say... You did. I would say that something... Yes. It's an odd one to recommend, given that it's not the lightest thing. But I think as a good introduction, visually easy to get into, very, 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 very readable... And gives you an idea that comics aren't just like thwack, pow, bang. Would be Art Spiegelman's Mouse.
Yeah.
Just because I think you come away from it. It's in a one hit. You read it, bam, and you think, oh yeah, comics, they're interesting. They've got stuff to say. And I think, you know, you could as I mean, Alex is a, you know, he's in his 50s, he's got a lot of life experience. I think that if you come to comics and, you know, there's nothing wrong with Judge Dredd, it's brilliant. There's nothing wrong with a lot of the other stuff, but it's like, oh yeah, it is just bang, thump, you know.
Yeah.
And I think maybe just give yourself a quick hit of, you know, comics can be about stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Paul?
And that's part of what I liked about the Frank Miller Batman title. Let me just jump in really quick. Is that it's good storytelling, and then also they're reasonably self-contained. So you don't have to know all of Batman's backstory. You don't have to know what the long-term relationship is that he has with any of the other characters that are in the story that you're reading, which I think is something that intimidates a lot of people, is if I jump in now, you know, is it even worth trying to start reading X-Men right now because they started in the 60s and there's all this stuff and I don't know how much of that stuff I have to know. And I think for a lot of people, approachability is a hard thing. So that's why I would absolutely recommend a trade, like a Frank Miller Batman.
Yeah, and I think also maybe stay away from stuff that is culturally more specific, like stay away from the manga a while. Because that's giving yourself a lot more work to do to kind of interpret the cultural references and on top of just getting up to speed with, you know, how to read a comic.
And a lot of people actually get kind of freaked out having the binding on the other side of the book. I'm not kidding. I've seen people freak out over that.
Mm. Yeah.
Man, your audio.
I was
going to
say, we're not with Jeff today, are we?
But luckily, we hope Plan B is going to come in.
Yeah, no, it's good.
So, Paul, what were
you? Yeah, sorry, I said what at one point because suddenly a window popped up and started playing an advert and I couldn't turn the music off of it. So, at some point, I say what in surprise. I don't know whose pick that I ruined, but it wasn't that. So somebody had the best idea. Right, I put some thought into this because, you know, Alex is a sweetheart, so we've got to, you know, put some thought into this. I reckon I've got a really good one for him. Watchmen and Mouse, I think, are too big to come in on at the start. I mean, Mouse is a seminal work.
All right.
And I think the problem with Mouse and Watchmen is you then have to struggle really hard to find something with as much validity or as much of a message.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certainly if you start Watchmen, the only way really is down after that in terms of comics. Now, first off, I'd say avoid Marvel and definitely avoid DC. Because, to be frank, there's just nothing that's massively interesting coming out of both houses. There's some interesting little pockets of stuff, but you need to have the knowledge of the universe or the lore or the characters or whatever. And the nice thing about Batman is... history to Batman. They reinvent the history every 5 years, so it doesn't really matter. But even so, and especially not at the moment with the whole Robin fiasco that's going on at the moment. It's just like totally drop Batman. I would say if you're going to go for any house of comics, go for Image. Because they are doing the seminal superhero book with Invincible, which is just... absolutely brilliant. And Invincible 100 dropped the ball a little bit, I think, but every other issue, and we're up to issue 105, has been and if you were going to go for any comic monthly, it would be Invincible. There is no comic that fills me with joy, even when it is absolutely viscerally violent comic strip action, superhero action. It's brilliantly done, and you love those characters, and sometimes those characters die, and they don't die to come back in 3 months' time. They die, and they die with a tear in your eyes. So Invincible is the best superhero comic book out there. If you're after comedy, Chew is my favourite comedic and yet still very story-based comic book action. You've got Savage Dragon, which is this hark back to 80s, you know, pedal to the floor comic book action, and I love Savage Dragon. You've got Walking Dead, which is brilliantly done but unrelentingly miserable, so it depends on how happy you want to be on a monthly basis. You've got Saga, which is the best space opera out there at the moment. You've got Prophet, which is gorgeously done.
Saga.
Image is the house, full stop. So that's one thing, and I like them a lot. But if I were going to pick one comic for Alex to read, which would give you a little bit of history, a little bit of beautiful artistry, a little bit of beautiful story, it would be, and I'm about to make a hypocrite myself, Marvels. And I can't remember who wrote it, that's terrible of me, but it's painted by Alex Ross. And it's about a photojournalist following the history of the Marvel characters through epochal
events. Oh, I forgot about that. Yes, yes, it's brilliant.
I could see Alex looking at Marvels and picking up bits that we wouldn't see. And I would be interested to know what Alex thinks of Marvels. It's beautifully painted. Alex Ross is utterly amazing as a comic book artist. And Marvel strikes me as being something where it is talking a language that Alex can step into in the comic book mm-hmm. thing. So if, like we're saying that, you know, Columbo, there's an audience of people who understand Columbo, so would then get the comic, I think Alex would get Marvels.
Mm.
It's Kurt Busiek.
Busiek, yep. Yep.
I'm not sure. I've met him, and I'm embarrassed now that I don't know how to pronounce his last name. But, I like a lot of stuff that he's written, so I didn't even know this existed. I totally want to check it out.
It's really cool,
Kelly. I
want to
make this an ongoing thing, because thinking about other ones and listening to you guys pick stuff makes me think of, like, three other things I want to tell Alex to read. So I want to make this an ongoing segment so that we can
this is
keep telling
Alex's
him stuff
homework
to get.
Section. So we're going to have to rename the section to What Should Alex Read By Next Week?
Yes.
But also I think that
perfect.
For two,
there will be a quiz.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of things that Alex should do is, for start off, is get him a copy of Comixology for himself. Because I think that the free comics, you know, the free stuff on there is, you know, why not? Why wouldn't you? The free stuff, just have a look, you know, and you can have a quick dip in and out. You don't feel that you're investing even, you know, $2.99 or $3.99. You can just have a, you know, some of the DC compendium stuff as well is quite useful, because you can look through that and say, oh yeah, and there's another strip about that. But also the one thing I would say as well on the artwork side is, you know, there's some of the greatest comic strip art. I mean, yes, the Batman stuff with Frank Miller is undisputably brilliant and things. Maybe his artwork is a little unintelligible to a new reader. I would say maybe try and make sure some of the artwork that you're looking at is a little more accessible than Frank Miller's.
Well, it depends which one you're reading. I mean, I would say Batman Year One is a brilliant Frank Miller book to come in on. Love you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes Frank Miller's artwork is actually the storyboard to the film that he wants to be filming, rather than the comic that he's doing.
Yeah, you think he's already right. leaping ahead, isn't he?
I mean, Batman, The Dark Knight Returns was gorgeous, but I think that was down to Klaus Janson doing the inking of it, because The Dark Knight Strikes Back was not gorgeous, in my humble opinion. I didn't like that.
No,
that
was not.
Didn't do it for me, artwork-wise.
Yeah. Mike Mignola, his stuff is quite, you know, there's something I find interestingly accessible about that as well.
And I just want to jump in here and say that I was having this conversation with Jeff this morning. I got an email this morning from Dark Horse, and it was just a standard email. It's not like they sent a note to me personally. yet. But
dear lady that stalks us around our office all week, please stop.
No, nothing like that at all. I have the Dark Horse app. Dark Horse has a separate application, and I have it because they're not in Comixology, and for Star Wars comics, I don't get an option, basically. So Dark Horse sent me a note, and I'm trying to pull up the thing now. They're having a sale. And it was creator-owned comics on sale, and a few, like, a variety of other things that they were trying to sell me. And $15 later, I finally managed to make it out of the Dark Horse web store alive. seriously, so they're having a sale right now on a variety of things that I thought were really enjoyable, and I'm trying to see if I can get... There we go. Digital.darkhorse.com is where we need to be. And the sale right now on the owner-created stuff is pretty fab right now. They've got a deal going with Dynamite Comics, who is... I don't quite remember what the relationship is there, but there's some stuff from Dynamite Comics that they're publishing. So right now... You can get something called The Boys. It's a $17 graphic novel that I picked up for $5 that I haven't read yet and know nothing about except I looked at it, and then I was like, I think Simon Pegg is in this comic, so I bought it.
Actually, I'll tell you what, I could see that.
That's reason enough right there.
If there was a film of the boys, listen, Simon Pegg would be history. Him, yeah. Huey. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then The Goon, they also have in there available on sale. Some issues of Hellboy. There's a nice sampling of stuff here. Mm-hmm. And The Massive, which is one I'm really curious about checking out. And also one called Jennifer Blood. So she's like suburban house mom turned assassin.
Yeah.
So let's see. Wow. Jennifer Blood is a suburban wife and mom by day and a ruthless vigilante by night. Every day she makes breakfast, takes the kids to school, cleans the house, naps for an hour or two, makes dinner, puts the kids to bed, kisses her husband goodnight. This suburban punisher is ready to be unleashed in a story that can only be told by the legendary Garth Ennis. And this is through Dynamite Entertainment, and the thing with Dynamite Entertainment is that the creators there own all their stuff, and so somehow they've made some deal where they're releasing that stuff through Dark Horse Digital. So, yeah.
This
so
good night, or
I
as it's known
today,
now.
Today, both love, it, love, it, love and hate.
So, Kelly, since you are totally into your Star Wars Dark Horse comics, have you seen the reimagining of the original Star Wars movie that they did? Because the original was done by Marvel back when it came out, and they have done a new version. So totally modern artwork and modern storytelling, and go check it out. I think you're going to really like it.
I heard about this and I haven't checked it out yet. I've been reading the new Star Wars title they launched, which I've picked at some point recently because it's great. And it's been a lot of fun. And I really like it because it's true to the characters.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something about it I have really enjoyed. So, yeah, I'll have to go check that out. That looks really cool. And I know also Dark Horse was who released in the U.S. all of the manga adaptations of the originals, which are super awesome, by the way. The art in those is just tremendous.
All right. Better make a note so I go buy that.
I think...
Please do.
Looking at the boys and the stuff there, that in some ways he's a bit unsung, but I think Garth Ennis is often a good place to start because it's quite literate comic work, but it doesn't have some of the... Like Mark Miller, for example, his work, which is... I find just irritating. And Neil Gaiman, who is obviously brilliant, but maybe over literate for a first attempt at things. Garth Ennis seems to walk a line that the stuff is really well written, but is also really approachable. And I think it's a good Garth Ennis on a book as a writer is a good thing that you're going to enjoy reading it.
Yeah, but.
So I think Alex's homework is not as much to read all this stuff every week as to tell us which ones he likes and doesn't like so that we have a better idea what we should be telling him about in the future.
But also, Alex's homework is about £720 in Comixology. Oh, and Auntie, did you not feel like a drug pusher at that moment? You said, Alex, I suggest you go for Comixology. If every time I suggested something, do you know what, there is an app on your iPhone called Comixology. All I can hear behind me is the guy that says, ha, ha, another addict.
I'm going to be as we speak. I'm composing an email to his wife Miriam, saying, "Dear Miriam, the reason you haven't seen Alex for 3 weeks is because we've recommended
Comics. Me, I am so sorry.
The reason your children are no longer eating is because."
But on a happy note, at least your husband is enjoying himself.
Yes,
with adult entertainment such as graphic novels.
So I think that I think Alex has probably got quite a bit to be going on there, and I think next week he's going to report back and he's going to tell us how we got on.
He's going to tell us we're all insane, and that's awesome.
Yes,
perfect.
Actually, sorry, Jeff. Excellent. Can I?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's all it's going to be. Dear comic show, what the hell is wrong with you people? Love Alex.
Have you really not got work to do, Jeff? Can I just say, I'm fully with you on the modern Star Wars. But Howard Chaykin's, I don't know how you say that word, the surname, but Howard Chaykin's cover for Star Wars Issue 1, the Marvel adaptation, I love. And I've always loved that. It's one of my favourite bits of comic book artwork. If I had stupid amounts of money and I had bought every single Dave McKean piece there was to buy, that'll be the next one that I bought.
You know, I remember picking that up when it came out. And, yeah, it's just beautiful, wonderful art. And somewhere, because most of my comics are actually boxed right now, somewhere I have that box. And when I come across that and pull it out again, just like every time I pull it up and look at it, it's a magical moment. It's
and that's a childhood art. That's a childhood comic book image that I, you know, if they did the Flash Gordon thing with me, strapped me to the machine and all the memories came out, that would just come out first for comic books that you remember as a child. Star Wars, Howard Chaykin, Bosch, I am back there. I'm 12 years old going, look at it, it's Star Wars on a comic book page.
Yes, and it's something that you would just look at over and over. Not always just reading, sometimes just looking. Yeah.
You can get that on a shirt.
I want a duvet cover.
I have it on a shirt.
I want to sleep in that artwork. Jeff, get your mind out of the gutter. I was just saying I want to rest into that artwork.
Oh.
I don't blame you, but yeah, you absolutely could. I got it. I went to a Star Wars exhibit at the Pacific Science Center in Seattle. And on one of the things they had in the gift shop area of the exhibit was Star Wars number one comic book cover on a shirt. And I went, I need a souvenir, and it needs to be this. And so, yeah, that's the one I have. Cool. It's pretty fantastic. As a shirt, I love it.
We should do it. I think we should have a thing. We're going to be all about the whole show is going to be sections before long. You think, comic strips on shirts and things. I've made my own because you can't find any of them on eBay. I did have a look because I thought I'll buy one because, you know, somebody needs some money for things. I'd make my own Zenith, big yellow Z thing. Couldn't find one on eBay. Waited a bit. So, you know, it didn't take very long in Illustrator to do a big yellow Z. And sent it off to the local t-shirt printing company, who managed to cock it up. So now I'm going to load it up online and get Spreadshirt or somebody to knock me up a couple of Zenith strips, and they're going to take over from my old style Dr. Happy Mac sort of corporate. When I go out on site, I have like black workwear that I wear, and I've got a polo top, and it says Dr. Happy Mac with my smiling logo on it, and I'm done with that. You know, it doesn't make any difference to anyone. Nobody cares. The van's got my name on it. I'm going to wear what I want to wear. It makes me. And so I'm going to have some Zenith t-shirts made.
Yay!
So, anyway, picks of the week. We've got some picks. I know we have because I'm looking at the document. So, I think really we could have said, Alex, we've done that, but maybe the picks are different because it's not a place to start. So,
right.
Paul, what have you got for us this week?
Joe Sacco's seminal work, Palestine, which is Joe Sacco is a journalist and a graphic novelist, and he went into Palestine and he lived there for a number of months and he documented it in a comic book format. And Palestine, he's written a number of books. He went to Bosnia as well and did a book called Safe Area Garasta. He did one called Palestine. He then came out with one called Footnotes in Gaza, which is a mega Monty, thick and heavy hardback book. It's black and white brushstroke artwork. Don't know if you can see that. It's beautifully done. It is heart-wrenchingly sadly done. You come out of it feeling like you've done a 10-round fight with history that you can't change and you can't influence. You can just educate yourself about, and hopefully, I don't know. But Footnotes from Gaza is the wrong book to start with. There's too much going on in it. Palestine is much easier to pick up. Now, the irony of it, that is, it's on the bottom shelf of the bookcase, and as I was getting it out, the shelf above it broke, and the only thing now holding that shelf up is Palestine, so I couldn't get it out to show you. So it's an easy book to pick up, but not if it's on the bottom shelf and the shelf above breaks. But Joe Sacco, his stuff is very literate. It's very honest. I mean, he does not come off as the hero in this. He's a very honest, interesting guy. Palestine is just this horrible bit of history that you think you'd grown out of, and yet it's happening now. it's, to be honest, you know, with Andy saying mouse, personally, I think Palestine has got more meat and more grit into it. Mouse is more personal because it's about a father talking to his son. Palestine is about world affairs that are just heartbreakingly horrible.
Okay, bye!
And it's beautifully drawn, absolutely fabulously drawn.
It is, isn't
and,
it? It
is I teach really, when I teach graphic really design, nice. We do one of our, because I get to write the course and the course spec, and we do a month and a half on illustrated narrative, and Palestine is one of the books that I always get out.
But it's one of those strips. I mean, looking through the art on Google, that the narrative is built into every piece of the drawing, isn't it? Everything in the frame, all the faces, all the characters, the way that you're led, every single piece of the artwork has the narrative in its blood.
And there's a couple of double page spreads where he just draws the desolation of these horrible encampments or cities that have no water or food or care, that are bombed every night. And you look at it and you see the puddles with the refuse, with the dirt, with everything. You see kids playing in the rubbish and the junk and the tips with, you know, bombs and shells and artillery that have exploded and the shrapnel next to them. And he draws it onto the page. And it is a graphic novel and it is a comic strip and it is an illustrated story and it's not photorealistic, but it's not childish, it's not cartoony. But when he draws it, you kind of sit up and pay attention. And if you are, me personally, if I was a history teacher, I would be trying to find areas of history that I could teach using Joe Sacco's work, because he sums it up so beautifully. I'm not, so not beautifully, it's not pretty, it's not in any way pretty, but he sums it up effectively, and there is a beauty in the ugliness that he captures.
Yes, I think I'm just looking at that. I'm going to have to. That's one of the ones that, by the time it comes 10 minutes after we've bought this, I'm going to be working out how the hell I can be reading this strip. Mm. You can just see how compelling it is.
And it makes you want to cry sometimes. Yeah. It just does. But it should, because that's a mystery that it should make you want to cry.
Jeff, what do you reckon?
What do you reckon? My word.
Was that the echo from hell? I've shut down everything except for Skype. And even then it's... And QuickTime.
Isn't that just awesome?
Yeah, but this week we have a plan. Skype, we have beaten your wretched ass. We have. But so, Jeff, what are you gonna pick for us?
Okay, I gave our dear listeners a bit of foreshadowing today because of the artist that I picked. So my pick this week is called East of West, and it's from Image Comics. And, you know, you get a lot of post-apocalyptic type stories. What if the story was the apocalypse? And that's what East of West is. So it takes place in the United States, but there's a point around where the Civil War is taking place where there's a very critical incident that happens, and it changes our course of history. So at that point, it becomes an alternative United States. And so now we're up to modern times, and the apocalypse is happening. And so you have to deal with the four horsemen of the apocalypse and everything that goes along with what the apocalypse is supposed to be. But if you go into it thinking you're going to read a book that is dogma, that it's Christian history and Christian ideas, you're going to be very surprised and very, very mistaken, because that is so not what this is. And so you have just amazing art and you have a very compelling story, and it just, I mean, it really just draws you in. So you have the Horsemen of the Apocalypse who, I won't say because I'll start giving spoilers. And so they're running around doing their thing. And then you have Death running around doing his thing. And it's very clear to people that meet Death that they know exactly who they're meeting and who they're talking with. And he has his own very serious agenda. And all these characters, they actually have their own agendas and just very compelling, very interesting story with beautiful artwork to go along with it. So that's East of West from Image.
That's really cool.
The sound can. Oh God! It's all going off this week. Everyone's picks sound even better than normal. Everyone's picks sound like I need to be. But you know, Kelly, your one.
Yeah.
You haven't even spoken yet, but I'm intrigued. No. I have to say, I am intrigued just by the title.
Okay. So, for a particular flavor of nerd, the name John Kovalik will not be unfamiliar to you. He's the man behind a bunch of the Munchkin card game. He has a comic strip called Dork Tower, and he's an all-around wonderful fellow. I've spoken to him a few times on Twitter. I'm trying to convince him to come to Portland and teach me to play Munchkin. So far, it hasn't happened yet, but I'm working on it. He's really clever and very funny, and Dork Tower is a really entertaining strip. And I saw on Drive-Thru Comics, which is at comics.drivethrustuff.com. He put out this title called Dr. Blink Superhero Shrink. And it does what it says on the tin. That's really it. The description on the site is who watches the Watchmen psychoses? It's Dr. Blink, psychologist to the superheroes. Part Bob Newhart, part Astro City. It's the hilarious bi-monthly misadventures of the world's leading authority on meta-human mental health. So it's John Kovalik and Justice League Adventures Christopher Jones. These are the two guys that put this together. And it's about Dr. Blink, who wrote a book, Chicken Soup for the Super Soul. And you can get issue zero for free from Drive-Thru Comics. And it's awesome. I'm really entertained by the whole thing. It was really fun to read, and it's very I'm trying to think, like there's a lot of nods to stuff. So as people who read comic books, like you guys are totally gonna get the stuff that's happening here. It's really, really great. And the footnote to this is that I'm going to tell you, Drive-Thru Comics is also a place where you can pick up digital issues of La Brujeria, which was my first pick on the first episode of the show, because my friend Aaron is the guy that writes the comic.
Excellent. A good free comic is a thing of beauty, because it gives
and I laughed out loud. Like this is a very fun comic to read. It's a quick little read, and then there are subsequent volumes, but if you just want to check it out, you can start with the first one and see what you think. And I really enjoy it. It's a little bit Jeff, help me out. Comedy Central, Squiggle Vision.
Oh.
That show.
Oh crap, I can't remember.
And the stand-up comics come in and sit down and like talk about the problems that they're having as stand-up comics. It's like that show. It's a little Newhart-y because he's so the excruciatingly straight man in his own comedy. Dr. Blink is, and it's really, for me, it was a really fun read. I enjoyed it a lot, and particularly I think part of it is also a reaction to a lot of the stuff I've been reading lately. Sandman, which features death as a not insignificant character, and Killing Joke, and some of the other Frank Miller stuff. Like, I went back and flipped through 300 for something the other day, and I kind of needed what the internet calls the unicorn chaser. So this would be the unicorn chaser if you go pick up Palestine, which is brilliant that Paul recommended, or you're looking, if you go read something a little bit darker, like when you're done, go flip through this. It doesn't cost you anything, and it's a nice palate cleanser.
Excellent.
Awesome.
I've got a pick, my pick from the 1980s, the decade of my youth. Remember the 80s was like, okay, you could be like, you know, in the city and you could be earning money and have, you know, Audi Quattro, Porsche 911, etc., all great and things. But, or, and I was, and a lot of my friends were, you could be angry about a lot of stuff in the 80s. I mean, it was part of the decade where you think you could change the world just by being a little bit angry about everything. And it turned out that the comics...
Like, there's no middle ground. Or you can be angry.
Yeah, well, yes. And it turned out that comics could be decided that they could be angry as well. Well, yes. Particularly 2000 AD, you know, mainstream British comic, you know, mainstay of everything like that. And then the people that created it over at I think it was Fleetway owned them at the time, or was it IPC? It might have been IPC.
I was going to say
IPC, I suspect. Big corporate... I think it was IPC, yes. A big corporate, you know, magazine, publishing, conglomerate and things. So the guys that were making 2000 AD thought, yeah, we can be angry too. And they created a comic called Crisis with a big exclamation mark, in which everybody was angry in this comic. I mean, if you were angry about third world exploitation, if you were angry about troubles in Northern Ireland, if you were angry about that it's really hard to get decent bread to make toast from, you know, all these things you could be angry about.
Which is a legitimate concern.
Yeah.
Toast!
You know, this was the comic for you. I mean, it did last into the 90s, but the 90s weren't really an angry decade, and it pretty much faded away almost on the spot. But it was a reaction to... Because we also had Deadline, which was famous for bringing Tank Girl into the world, which, you know, you've done that, you're brilliant, you're golden.
You're good.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah. Tank Girl, Jamie Hewlett, what's not to love?
Right.
Oh, there goes a pick from next week, maybe. But yeah, I mean, the Wikipedia page says, oh, it's mature, intelligent, politically sophisticated. Perhaps it appeared to be at the time. I think it's mostly it was just angry.
Which is different, I mean, really.
Yes, it is. All sorts of weird stuff in there. I mean, things about, you know, issues about exploiting third world in strips. A nice little strip called The New Adventures of Hitler that posited
the dear fact God that, in heaven.
That Adolf Hitler... And this is the people that... Grant Morrison wrote this, and Steve Yeowell, who brought Zenith to the world. Grant Morrison wrote The New Adventures of Hitler that posited that Adolf Hitler visited Britain in between World Wars One and Two, and what happened to him in the UK so scarred him that he... formed Nazi Germany and
then he turned into Hitler.
And okay, on one hand, it's an interesting idea, on the other hand, it's troublingly offensive.
Yeah, I could see that.
But,
oh my god,
yes. Ryan Hughes also drew for it as well, and things. And Ryan Hughes is excellent, so maybe that balances things up. And a lot of the people that went in to be mainstays of 2000 AD, Simon Bisley, Glenn Fabry, John Hinkleton, they were all. They actually started in Crisis, but the one thing that Crisis did, which was brilliant and not at all angry, was that up until then, everything that was IPC, 2000 AD, all the other titles was, if you know, you were paid as a comic strip artist or a writer to write this stuff, and you handed over your creations to the corporate entity, and they went off and made money with it. And Crisis came along and said, no, creator owned. You write it. Off you go. When we're done with it, you can do what you want with it. A consequence that a lot of the stuff in there did become, you know, graphic novels and was republished afterwards and went on to make more money for the artists. But that was a crucial thing in British UK comics for Crisis at the time, was it's your copyright. You know, we're just licensing it from you. And
yeah.
Good on them for that.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'd also like to pick, this is an anti-pick, courtesy of the free section of Comixology. Open brackets, curse you, Comixology, close brackets. Is I made the horrendous, horrendous decision to download a little comic strip called America's Army.
Oh, okay, this sounds... okay.
I've never even heard of this.
Have you not?
I know nothing of this.
Well, you know, well, basically, you may have heard of the video game from 10 years ago, America's Army, where the American Army thought, you know what, not enough young people are volunteering to be slaughtered. We need to do something that tells them that being in the army is pretty much just like being in a video game. So they created this video game called America's Army, and they gave it away for free. And lo and behold, lots of people thought, golly, doesn't that look fun? So that's over and done with. What the American Army have now decided is that, you know what, perhaps if we sold ourselves in comic strip form, this generation of kids would think that joining the army would be...
Because you know what the army is missing.
I'm looking at some of this right now. And, oh, my God.
It is, and excuse me, this is going to be a sentence that you can hang, draw, and quarter for me for the next three episodes afterwards. It is the least convincingly didactic experience I have ever had.
Oh, my God. Wow.
That was such an offensive comment that the audio dropped out.
When I think of comics, you know, yeah, these are the stereotypical comic book reader is exactly what the army needs. People who don't like to be outside, people who aren't going to enjoy marching anywhere, people who barely wear sweatpants.
People that are convinced that bullets bounce off you.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what, though. I want to read the comic where America's new army are the comic book geeks and the computer game nerds. Sorry to use those terms. But those are the guys who have been encouraged to go into the army.
That's what they are.
And the army is just staffed by guys who actually just want to read comics and play computer games.
And you know, and they always say you go to war with the army you have, not the army you want.
Yes.
There it is.
But I think the horror for me was it was free and I downloaded it, started reading it. First of all, I was offended by the art, which was as cheap as they could possibly get it. And then when I realised what they were doing and the character, the high school character who was really bright and smart, but he was disenfranchised and he cheated at tests because he had no moral fibre. But then he discovered his girlfriend taught him that if you cheat at tests, it doesn't mean that you've passed them. And he discovered this and then, you know, he backslided a bit. And it turned out he's just what the American army wants. Yeah, he volunteered. Of course, because it's a comic strip. And he volunteered to be a medic because medics are good and kind and don't, you know.
Oh, my God, gag me.
Yes. Anyway, I'm
gagged.
I just threw up in my mouth a little.
Way, but it sounds a bit worryingly like Glee to me as well.
Well, you know, it's you know what? It's the Glee.
We're going to go to war, yeah.
Start singing the Beatles.
It's killing some bad guys.
It is to military recruitment what Glee is to music.
In that case, both are disasters.
God, okay. I need a unicorn flavoured
like
palate cleanser
more, like
after that.
Or as much as.
Dr. Blink, superhero shrink! Dr. Blink, superhero shrink.
Yeah.
Happy.
Excellent. Oh, God.
My goodness.
So, is it time for me to do the thing about UK2.net?
I believe so.
There's a thing about UK2.net.
That's what we hear.
Yeah. Basically, they're the sponsors. Them, the guys with the checkbook. Jolly good that they do too, because it's not just, you know, it's a two-way street. They pick up the check for the downloads and the bandwidth and stuff and allow the network to do what the network does. And they've been doing that for a good few years. And in return, you can get some damn good internet services from them. The whole schmoll, you know, domain registration, email services. Ewan keeps telling us that they have online site building thing. I mean, I've got loads of people that will never grasp the idea of how to build a website. And this is the sort of stuff that is bread and butter. If you do it well, which UK2 site is, you know, it's great. You can go, you build your own website, sort it out in next to no time at all. You do get, if you go to them from British Tech Network, they also as good as to give people a pretty sizable discount on all the services that they offer. So the British Tech Network Comics Podcast doth. We do thank UK2.net for stepping into the breach, because you know what? Podcasting, some bits are free. The bit we're doing is free. Some bits of it, not quite so free. And
slightly less free.
Yes, and well done to UK2.net. So, whereabouts are we all this week? Same place as last week, everyone? Are we... nobody's moved web address? Nobody's moved Twitter handle?
I'm still Verso.
I'm still Jay Gamut.
Only
I'm
half
still
of
Dr. Happy Mac. Oh, yeah. I'm wondering about that.
You say that like it's a bad thing. Oh, I'm still me, damn it. I'm
still wondering about that. Maybe next
there are
week
worse people you could be. I mean, you could
this
be Gabe
true.
Dibbons. And we'd be harassing
get
you.
Get out of my brain.
Whilst we've been recording, my phone has pinged into life. And on the the Google Hangouts thing, we have had, why are you doing this to me? Andy Vaughan has added a comment about he's being better than Dave Gibbons. He reckons he also is better than Dave Gibbons himself, and he's uploaded a convincing little doodle of some sky and some clouds and some sun. And when you do listen to the show, Andy, yes, you are. And on that note, I think it's time to say goodnight, sayonara, and I think we've got to the last page of issue 7.